Bannachton as far cherugas chachle. She Fiona McArdle Mish. I'm Fiona McArdle and I'd like to welcome you to Chachle. In Chachle this week, Sakhar Masho J Chachle, De Vunja Vashira Chachle, two kinsmen who wanted change, Edward and William Christian. As De Skeel and Hin, and two stories of the sea, with a contrast in fortunes. This evening, Thursday the 11th of December, sees the first of the evening performances by Peel Pantaloons of this year's production, Robin Hood, which will be starting at 7 o'clock in the Centenary Centre in Peel. There'll be another evening performance at 7 tomorrow, Friday the 12th, and then on Saturday the 13th, there'll be a matinee performance at 2 o'clock, and then the final performance will be at 7 o'clock on Saturday evening. Peel Pantaloons and Robin Hood this evening, Friday and Saturday. On Saturday evening, 13th of December at 7:30, there'll be a concert in St. German's Cathedral, Isle of Man, in Peel, when the Isle of Man Wind Orchestra presents a programme of festive and other music to get you in the Christmas spirit, from, as they say, the Coventry Carol to a bit of Kate Bush. There'll be tea and coffee available before the start of that concert in the cathedral. There's no admission charge, but there will be a retiring collection. And that's the Isle of Man Wind Orchestra's concert this Saturday evening in St. German's Cathedral. If you can't be in the West on Saturday evening, you can go along to the Institute in Laxey to enjoy the singing of Mine's a Shanty, with an evening of sea shanties, songs of the sea, and some festive numbers too. Tickets for that are £10, for which you can give Gary a ring on 498773. That's 498773. Mine's a Shanty will be in concert in Laxey Institute this Saturday evening, the 13th of December, at 7:30. Ta dunyas gan shol on shanachas fanin, ach squeche, nach fel shin shiga mekionan enamega. Ons recordasin, ta e enam recordage ons kumagier, mer ed, as haneli sulla, mer van enam Edward, na Edmund. Ach ta bi sonachud smu, tan enam ega skruut mer Edward. Ach ta shin shiga, da rowan slienu ega, Christine. As she macve, da sagat heel machel, rugage musha vlein shaky jeg, as ve arnevein, na captain spijelach, as hure birches ons a chejacht inja shar, as news ve a ve, ons a hurt riol, treve govracha dan Duke J. Buckingham. Trehenk edad erashgus manin, ren jemus stanlach, vaginu ober mer char vanin, as ye e air, cur en ere ebled. As we pointed, the reka fengelison an ellen, eratalu as erachidin. As rishpert de vlinten, va edar de christin, nil yas chianurt ellen vanin. James Stanley is the figure known in Manx history as Un Stanlach Mooar, and while still Lord Strange, the heir to the Earl of Derby, he became the de facto Lord of Man. In fact, he took over the leading administrative role in the Earlship of Derby some 15 years before his father's death in 1643. 1643 was also the year in which James Stanley, just that year having become the 7th Earl of Derby, dealt with a serious challenge to the Stanley's rule, and that came from Edward Christian.
With James Stanley leaving the island to go and fight for the royalist cause, Edward Christian seized his opportunity. And he's described as the adviser, counsellor, and persuader of an armed body of people who came to Tynwald to express their grievances, and who subsequently took part in direct action to support the non-payment of tithes. Tithes were payable to the established church, so evidently Edward Christian was a dissenter, as were so many who espoused the parliamentarian cause. Edward Christian's radical agenda, as well as resisting the efforts of the Stanley family to turn the island into their own feudal kingdom, in which they owned everything and the Manx people were merely tenants, was most notably for a popularly elected House of Keys, something which didn't happen for more than another 200 years. He wanted the Deemsters to be elected by and out of the House of Keys, and they were to hold office for a fixed term of only 3 years. And he was opposed to the paying of tithes, as we've heard, to the established church. Edward Christian had the Manx militia take an oath of loyalty to himself, and they seized the minor forts round the island. However, they failed to take Peel Castle, probably because of a garrison of Stanley followers from England, and for that reason they didn't attempt Castle Rushen. James Stanley arrived back in the island in June of 1643, and he himself writes, "When first I came among the people, I seemed affable and kind to all, so I offended none. For, taking off your hat, a good word, a smile or the like, will cost you nothing, but may gain you much." In a subsequent meeting he says, "I made one good step into business, which was to divide the faction." And indeed, having divided most of the faction from Edward Christian, James Stanley then conquered by fining but quickly releasing a few others, including Edward Christian's brother, William Christian of Knockrushen, that's another William Christian, not Ilium Don, but singling out Edward Christian himself to bear the brunt. Edward Christian was fined 1,000 marks and condemned to perpetual imprisonment in Peel Castle, or until he should be released by the Lord, of which, of course, there was little likelihood. That sentence against Edward Christian was pronounced on the 13th of December, 1643.
The Dane, Edad Christine, the Hergera Eben Luchtai Stanlach, as Elie James Stanlach, the Chruri Riachton Selen Vannen, Redbeach Uluent Halu, Lesh Charn Vannen. Beach Uluent Vannen, Ihin, Faget Gun Talu Abi, as Shaitaniston Nalumakan, Beacha J. Charn Vannen. Van Luchtai Christine, Mernain Jane Luchtan Tai Smooth Ganshaw Sennelian, Nei an ei. As ons edda de Christine, a paach en jachon, beach erlu, geba, rudden jache jenume achjaun. As harau eisen en ezra kanolta jane lochtai Christine, van nei na Stanleyen. Ba eddad Christine, an o da Ilium Christine, trude eir juin, sachot ons macho. Van breer de juin, en fer shinna jay mek Ilium Christine, na Ilium Ella. As Asian pointed mer brew. Henk mak de brew Ilium, de vein a brew nis, as Asian Ewan Christine, cousin de Edad Christine. Va enem an navak de brew Ewan Christine, Ilium, as Asian Meyer enya an Shanachus vanen mer Ilium Dawn. There's a tendency for people to talk about the English Civil War, but that's come to disregard momentous events in Scotland, Ireland, Wales, Cornwall, and of course here in the Isle of Man.
In 1651, James Stanley again went away to fight for the Royalist cause, leaving the Countess Charlotte in Castle Rushen. Meanwhile, however, the Parliamentarians had been preparing a large force to come to the island. On the one hand, there were fears that the Countess would give away the island's rights and privileges in return for the release of her husband James Stanley, who'd been captured, and unknown to the Countess by that time he'd already been executed. The islanders feared, as they said, that she would be prepared to sell them for tuppence or threepence apiece. On the other hand, the invading forces would have been a huge imposition on the Manx population, who would have had to house and victual them. And if the Manx were deemed to be standing with the Stanleys and supporting the Royalist cause, the outcome could be unpleasant and even fatal. The crushing weight of a full-scale parliamentarian invasion was averted by the action of William Christian, Ilium Don, who probably saved the Countess's life by negotiating directly with the parliamentarians. Had the Countess opposed the parliamentarians, and particularly had there been any casualties on the parliamentarian side as a result, it seems not unlikely that she wouldn't have been given safe passage to leave the island, as she subsequently was after the intervention of Ilium Donne. On the restoration of the monarchy in 1660, there was a general amnesty declared. But Charles Stanley, the 8th Earl of Derby, declared that the amnesty applied to actions against the king, not against the Lord of Man. But it wasn't until 1662 that he finally took action. On the charge that Ilium Donne had been a traitor in standing against Charles Stanley's mother, the Countess of Charlotte, and taking on himself to treat with the parliamentarians. The outcome is well known and still remembered in Manx history. But the mandate for the arrest of Ilium Donne was issued, perhaps by design, noting Ilium Donne's kinship to Edward Christian, on the 13th of December, 1662.
We heard of the action of Edward Christian and of William Christian, Ilium Donne, and Edward Christian's grandfather was the great-grandfather of Ilium Donne. That's to say, Ilium Donne was a first cousin once removed of Edward Christian. Treva Charles Gard Gerlacha script dan Vishak Tare Agen ons Taiklai Tai Tashti Vanen, Begeri Gors Chach Rudnyach, Ver Clashen, Foshmona in a Hulush, as Vegeba Fern Mach, Mave Nachan Re, Nave Kangel Trish Shan Cleachta. Anchby, Hadod the Fern Rudderby, as Vejichen de Rawe and Rud Anyach Renmona Crew Ihin. En reva Charles Geary Kirstjach, ba tan voer en tojach as en gerra jede holio rud. As merschen tashen clashen Anthony Quail greschen on sevishach. Taslein a kirtan Lord McKeown a kelchi moor rainit. Ach tan aye de velen voer scara sly vinengelia, liga harish de velen voer co hangla sly as buil. Rish imma de blinten, be bonus nyau yintach trolter a talu, kindach rish awanen a slagen, ye uns a geura, treva kathan and dolly as goach, kindach rish an emsher. Be father sether trolch erevur. The island was proud last year to be the focus of the celebrations of 200 years of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, founded in 1824. Following the appeal of Sir William Hillary, at a time when he was living in Douglas and was personally involved in saving lives at sea. There are two contrasting situations associated with this time of year. The first involved a Royal Naval Vessel HMS Racehorse, which was wrecked on Dressick Point on Langness on the 14th of December 1823, with a loss of lives including brave rescuers who came out from Castletown. As we heard in Shachlair 3 years ago, a lot of underwater archaeology was carried out on the site of HMS Racehorse by Brian King, whose book The Wreck of the Racehorse was published by Loughton Books in 2022 as part of the bicentenary of that event.
What was it particularly in 1968 that attracted attention to HMS Racehorse?
I was always interested. I was very interested in diving at this time, and I was going through the museum looking for details of shipwrecks, as was Brian Stigand, who I became very friendly with. But it actually, the racehorse came about when I got chatting to Lieutenant Chambers from Castletown, retired Royal Navy, who I knew socially, and he told me about this ship out at Langness that he'd found out, and I followed it up from there with Brian Stigand. We went round and found the details in the newspapers, and that's what triggered the whole thing, actually. I think, like a lot of divers at that time, it intrigued you. Any shipwreck intrigued you, and you liked to know a little bit about it, and in those days, of course, you quite often liked a souvenir. I mean, it was nice to get a ship's bell, for example, or something like that. But we went down on it just because of general interest, and I started going down and finding out a bit more about it. I became sort of involved in it, and it just went on its own from there. when I was first looking for the shipwreck, and I decided to have a good look for it, I went down to the Maritime Museum at Greenwich to get some documentation, and all the records are there, but in the middle of it all, they moved to Kew Gardens. So later on, I went down for a week and spent a week at Kew Gardens going through all the records, because there, luckily, because it was an Admiralty ship and the court-martial, all the records are kept there. And if you go down and you get the right references, you literally get a cardboard box tied with a red ribbon. They bring out and they open it up, and there you can actually see the captain's log, the muster book. I got the supplies books. I got all the information I could need. I spent a whole week down there. And, of course, that is the result of that is the information which is in the book, which includes things like the lists of every crew member who was there, what they were carrying. An interesting aside to it is that the cruiser class, of which the Racehorse is one of, there were over 200 of them built, was very efficient, and the Dutch wanted one, and they actually went out and captured one called the Grasshopper and took it back to Holland and put their shipwrights over it, and they then used it in their navy, but it was then recaptured back again. It was renamed the Irene by the Dutch and recaptured back again by the British. But what was interesting was about 40, 50 years ago, a book was published in Holland listing all the information that had been found under the name of the Brig Irene, which is what the Dutch had called it, and we used that book as a reference for all the information that we could get off the shipwreck itself. Mm.
You did develop it into a proper project. You went down in June 68 and did a very much organised dive on it. But then you had to learn extra techniques?
Yeah, well, when we first went down on it, we were just recovering the artefacts that were on the surface, because at that time it wasn't a protected wreck. And any dive we could go down there, and having dived on it and found it, we realised that lots of artefacts were lying around generally and could just be picked up. And could possibly disappear. So we then with, in conjunction with the museum, Larch Garrard, as it was in those days, she encouraged us to go down and recover all the artefacts that we could find on the surface, as long as we logged where we found them. After that, it fizzled out a bit. We'd recovered all the surface artefacts that we could, and in fact I wasn't actually a member of the Isle of Man's Tobacco Club at that time. I was doing it freelance. So from there it just lapsed, and Colin Colvin, who was also involved with this at early stages, decided to follow it up and try and get some ownership or get some protection for it, and it was he who worked and got the protection organised with Johnny Crellin from the museum, who bought it on behalf of the Tobacco Club, and it became a protected wreck, and nothing was done then for a few years. Mm. So when we went back again later on to do it properly, by then the Isle of Man Tobacco Club, which was, I was a member of then, and of course they owned the wreck by this time, we had our own boat, so that helped considerably, as opposed to the early days when we were sort of cadging lifts out in boats. But the club had got a couple of 16-foot and 18-foot boats, so we did get out there quite easy, operating from Castletown Beach most of the time. When we first went there, of course, all the surface artefacts had been recovered by us initially, so then we had to start digging a bit deeper. At this time, we weren't sure how about to go about it, so that's when six of us went down to the Mary Rose and worked on it, and spoke to Margaret Rule and explained the situation, and she gave us some guidance about how we could tackle it. But of course the Racehorse was totally different from the Mary Rose. Mary Rose was sitting in sand, a flat level bottom, whereas our Racehorse was in the middle of rocks and jagged rocks at that, and tides and various things like that, so it was quite difficult. But we used to operate quite often from Castletown Beach. It was the nearest place, and we had to time it right with the tides, but it was okay because it was shallow and just had to be careful of the tides. Mm. When we did go back down, as I said, the surface artifacts on the surface had been removed, but we could see various things underneath rocks and things like that, so we had to start what really became an almost major excavation by lifting rocks. Some of them must have been weighed ton, half a ton, and certainly were 8 and 10 feet across. And we had to lift them to get at the artifacts that were underneath. And then underneath those were smaller stones, which we moved by bucket, really, put them into bucket and walking along the bottom and taking them well out of the way. And it was during one of these lifting sessions that when a rock slipped out of the slings and dropped, and we ended up finding what we call Tony's Hole. Tony's Hole, while we were recovering the rock from there, Tony Heaton, who the hole was named after, noticed some glistening bronze in the corner, and that started the excavation in that hole, which resulted in us finding the gunner's chest. While we were carrying out an organised excavation there, we were operating from Castletown, and Castletown commissioners were very helpful, and they loaned us the land of a hall just in the square, and we actually had an exhibition there of the artefacts as we were finding them, and many Castletown people came in to see it, and that was the start of the exhibition, which we then held again later on in Loch Promenade Church, where we had something like 60, 70 artefacts. The book was from documents I've held all these years, and I was worried that they were going to be lost if something wasn't recorded. I'd tried before to do a book with the record all this, but various things had got in the way. But I found out about Lockton Press and Sarah Goodwin and George Hobbs, and I just showed them the material and said, I've got all the material here, but it needs some sorting out and putting into context, and would you like to have a go at it? And the result is the book.
Brian King, who was involved in the mapping of the site and recovery of artefacts from HMS Racehorse, which was wrecked on the 14th of December in 1822. Ochamas and Cumas J. Crach, Tanvur and Ach Tamuren Sly Trot Noon the Snow, Dashendagre, Gus as Vo Chanelin. Ashenanach, Takujan Mura as Lanch de V, Roshtan and Elin. Jew, Tankud Smoo Joe Shen, Chit on Spoxan Mura. Ach Takud Smoo Joe Fagail and Elin, Follum. Shenefe. Nachvel mona ke de gedn rairish na costas and smoo, ta kailtrish curlish kujan de sanelin. Back in 1980, Connery Chappell published a book that he called Island Lifeline, in which he gave the history of the individual vessels of the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company and of the company itself. There have been significant changes to the fleet since 1980, with three of the current four vessels having been built in 1998 and the new flagship, the Manxman, being built in 2023. Last time in Chatelet, we heard about the Isle of Man steam packet vessel, the ill-fated Ellen Vannin. However, that vessel was originally launched in 1860 as the Mona's Isle, the second vessel of that name, and a name that takes us back to the origins of the company.
In the early 19th century, the service to the island for cargo, for mail, for passengers, was often patchy, frequently at the mercy of the wind and the tide, and in the winter it was sometimes almost non-existent. Even then, if there was a service, the vessels were uncomfortable, providing little protection for those on board. The poor service was a frequent cause of great annoyance and complaint, and particularly in respect of the mail and the growing needs of the island's business community. On the 17th of December, 1829, James Quirk, the High Bailiff of Douglas, chaired a meeting which was held in the Dixon and Steel Sail Rooms on Douglas Harbour to investigate the possibility of obtaining a better service, a reliable service, and at that meeting the attendees were presented with what it would cost for them to build, to maintain, and to provide a service with a steam packet vessel of their own. The meeting was positive and successful, and it was agreed to move forward on this and to form a company, to subscribe to buy a vessel. There was some thought of calling this vessel the Princess Victoria. However, royalist sentiment was put aside in favour of national feeling, and the name chosen was the Mona's Isle. The company itself, which arose out of that meeting, was called the Mona's Isle Company.
The meeting that decided on the formation of the Mona's Isle Company was held on the 17th of December, 1829. In 1832, it became the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company, and the rest is history. And, as Connery Chappell's account of the company and its vessels shows, history is constantly evolving, so there are whole new chapters to be written by someone since the publication of his book, Island Lifeline, in 1980. Now another musical date for your diary is next Wednesday, the 17th of December, when St. German's Cathedral, Isle of Man, is the setting for the students of University College, Isle of Man's music course, both past and present, to get together for a celebration of their hard work and talent, as they promise you in the title, One Wonderful Night. You can expect an evening of Christmas classics and original music, and there will also be guest appearances. Refreshments will be available, and that's all starting at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening, the 17th of December, in the Cathedral. UCM music students, past and present, with One Wonderful Night. Astashen Kurle Shungus Jera Shachle. And that's it for Shachle this time. Next Thursday will be the final programme in this series. But now from me, Nish Vohm Fiona McArdle, Slendrew.